Hi, I'm Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like...
Yeah.
That sounded like when Kim Cattrall did the scat. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I'm challenging Kim Cattrall to be a corn.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good show.
Hi, Babelito.
Qué pajo, Fabi.
We are in Nueva York. Dios, can you believe it?
Nunca en mis wildest dreams.
Dream bigger. Where are we?
Oh, my God, bitch. I am nervous. I'm sweating. I've been hiding it the whole night, but we are in the presence of indie Latinx royalty.
Dun, 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 dun. We are in Angelica Negron and Jose Olivares' house in Bushwick.
Otherwise known as half of Balloon. As in, if you listen to our episode when we review music from 2018, you heard that they were our number one band of the year. How are you guys doing?
Good. Yeah.
That's all?
No.
Good.
Super excited to have you guys in our casa. Yeah, it's kind of a dream. I forgot how to talk. Oh no, we're super psyched to have you guys here over for dinner and to talk.
The sentiment is mutual. I mean, I've been talking about this day for a long time. And I'm so excited. And we not only we're lucky to have you guys to talk about all kinds of different things, but Angelica cooked for us. It was insane. It was amazing.
So we had mofongo.
Yes.
With rice. And the mofongo was chicken, right?
Yeah, stuffed with chicken. Yeah.
And can you tell me the ingredients? How did you make it?
Mucho MSG. ¿Cómo el sazón ese? ¿Cómo se llama? El con achote.
Sí, el sazón. No sé.
Ajá.
Yo no cociné.
El sazón Goya con achote y colorante. It's so good. Your beautiful color in your chicken. Probably not good for you, but very tasty. And onions and sofrito and lots of garlic and then frying everything twice. And yeah, it's Puerto Rican food in a nutshell.
Oh my God. And then we had rice and beans. Oh, how do you guys say it?
Arroz con habichuela.
It reminds me of Veronica. Shout out to Veronica from Radio Menea. It was amazing. I've never had mofongo before. I've heard about it, but I never had it. And it was a really good first experience. But you were cooking like a pro. Like, how long you've been doing this? Who taught you how to cook? Tell me everything.
I've been cooking, I think, for the past like 12 years since I moved out of my mom's house. I didn't cook when I was at home. But my mom used to cook a lot for me. I'm an only child, and I grew up with her. And so I've been observing her cook just for the two of us, but as if it were for 20 people, because that's how she, that's how she rolls. And I've been watching her and learning, and now it's my time. Yeah.
Your time to shine.
Jose, do you cook?
Not really. Not a lot. I have a very limited menu, so whatever I cook is just for myself. So we don't share the same skills in the kitchen, I can say.
Okay, what are your skills? I want to know. Tell me.
None.
Hot Pocket.
Oh shit.
Well, I graduated from Hot Topic and Hot Pockets. I can do pasta, you know? No sauce.
Oh, así nomás.
Así pelada. Al dente. Yeah, just like pasta and chicken. Anything that can be in the microwave bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or that takes like 8 minutes on the stove.
It's called the stove.
Sí, querida.
And Jose's like me, he has to have a side of meat protein. And I give him a tip. I said, just buy a pack of bologna and you will always have protein in your life. So when Angelica's not here, just pull out that bologna and that's what you're going to eat.
Can you please stop talking about bologna on the show?
Hells no.
Oh my God.
What? Bologna?
Let's get back to the mofongo. So you take the plátanos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you call them?
Yeah, plátano verde.
Plátano verde. And then you cut it into pieces. I saw that you lo aplastaste, but that was to make the tostones.
No, I fry it first.
What? Okay.
I fry it first.
Uh-huh.
And then I mash it in the el pilón.
Uh-huh.
Con un poquito de aceite, garlic, and what else? Well, you're supposed to also put chicharrón, but I didn't. I was lazy today. Just mash it and then until it has like the nice shape, and then you carefully take it out and
so
then
you
stuff
make like
it
a
with
little,
anything.
Like a little bowl
como
with
un platito.
It.
Ajá, como un
plátano bowl.
And then you take it out and then stuff it with. I love it when it's stuffed with seafood.
Mm.
But today I made it with chicken, so kind of simple recipe for today. But
I know for me.
And for Jose too, who doesn't eat seafood. Yes.
Okay, speaking about food. Where do you guys meet? How was your love of cooking and your love of eating, Jose, brought you all together?
We met in college, right? Uh-huh. Yes.
And this was in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, we met in college in Universidad de Puerto Rico, la UP. Yeah.
UP.
We played in different bands at the time, and we just met, just, you know, being a part of the scene. And then I had started like a side project from my band, and Angelica, like, we were taking the same classes, and we just started collaborating. And somehow my plan worked, and that became a relationship.
This is the most romantic story I've ever heard in my life.
I made a band so I can meet my wife.
And that's how Balloon was born.
It was a plan.
So wait, so you guys met in college, but I want to know about the cooking.
The cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of what we did in our early stages was like going out to eat.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going out, aka me, going out to your mom's house to eat.
Yeah, because you like my mom's cooking a lot. And my mom loves cooking for you. Right. And she stopped cooking the things that I loved, like mofongo stuff with shrimp. She would just then do it. Another thing for Jose. And that was the end of good mom's.
You have to remember that my mom is not from Puerto Rico. And I like Puerto Rican food. And your mom did legit Puerto Rican food.
The secret comes out.
Yes. So why would
I
eat at home?
Your mom's cooking a lot, so
you are secretly,
it worked out.
You're secretly Venezuelan.
Yeah. I love Nene's arepas, yes.
Yeah. I like arepas. I don't like the rest.
Yeah, so spending a lot of time with like each other's house with our respective moms and enjoying their food was a big part of our relationship in the beginning.
Yeah, and I don't know, whenever we had like a little bit of money in a pocket, we would go to Macaroni Grill.
Oh,
fancy, after watching the Puerto Rico Symphony.
Yeah, date night. Pizzeria Uno, Chili's, Macaroni Dennis. Grill, Denny's.
Wow. Damn, you really know how to treat a girl right.
Angelica paid most of the time.
We split
like
the bill.
I said, wow.
I was the one making that money.
That cash money, bro.
The cash money playing violin in orchestras and in hotels. Back in my past life as a violinist.
And you guys came together to the States, to New York, or you moved somewhere else?
We didn't live together in Puerto Rico, so we got married in Puerto Rico. So Angelica applied for NYU, and I also applied just in case I would get in, and we both got in. So that kind of like kickstarted like our parents. Well, you're moving to New York now, you have to get married. Because you can't leave.
It keeps getting more and more romantic.
Yeah. You can't live together if you're not married. So, yeah, that's how we got married. And then the next day, we moved to New York.
What year you guys got married?
Many, many years ago.
It was 12 years ago. No?
Wow. Escándala.
Uno más.
Trece?
Trece.
Okay. Yeah, so do the math.
Six.
2006. 2006. And... Didn't we do a tour before we moved to New York?
Yeah, we got married. We
left the next day for a tour.
Yeah, well, we came to New York and we spent like a week looking for an apartment.
Oh, that was the honeymoon.
That was the honeymoon.
Where the TV fell. In the,
oh my God!
What? Tell us that story, please.
So you gotta know that we for our honeymoon we chose the like the no sé cómo decir era como el hotel más artístico that we found in Manhattan.
Get the Gershwin Hotel.
Gershwin Hotel.
Club 96.
So we went to the Gershwin Hotel. It had Andy Warhol all over and a bunch of other artists that you can find at Times Square right now. but the thing is that one day the television fell from the wall. Like, it wasn't a flat screen. We're talking about like 2006. So this was like a 25-inch.
It fell
like,
right on top of the...
Of a chair.
Of a chair that I used to sit
that
on.
She would sit in the morning. So.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
Oh my God.
So we survived that. And then we went on tour for the first Balloon album.
Yeah.
We went to Chicago.
And then we moved to New York and went to school and stayed here.
Got in debt.
Yeah.
Student loan debt. Yeah. And that's
tons of debt.
So Balloon is over 13 years old at this point?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we met in 2001, Angelic and I. And Balloon, I think, was formed like 2003. So the thing with Balloon is that we met and we decided... So at that time in Puerto Rico, like if you were like an indie artist, and I'm guessing this is true for most like people around that time, is that if you wanted to release music, you were at the mercy of being on a record label. So when we first started out, we were doing just electronic music and we had a CD burner. So we just started putting out music. So that's how Balloon kind of like got kickstarted. Like we started collaborating and then like 6 months later we put out our first EP. So it was that fast.
Yeah, and Balloon has gone through many transformations. It started mostly like just electronic. It was the two of us playing old Casio keyboards and a CD player. And then we added a guitar. I started to play accordion, so I had more acoustic instruments. Then I started bringing the violin, which was my main instrument. And then it kind of evolved into what it is today. But yeah, it's seen many different incarnations. Yeah.
So you moved to the States. You find yourself on tour. I'm guessing Angelica is not cooking on tour. What the hell are you eating, Jose?
I had to force everyone on that tour to eat whatever I could eat. So I don't eat. Imagine an 8-year-old, right? Imagine an 8-year-old who's just graduating from the Happy Meal to the
Kids Meal.
Was that? Yeah. from the kids meal to the value menu.
Oh,
that was me. Like single cheeseburger? No, now I can get a double cheeseburger. That was my
Grandes Ligas.
I have a really important question. Do you remember the first time you had a Big Mac?
I remember the first time I had something that was bigger than a Big Mac.
What?
In Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh.
Around las Olimpiadas del 2000.
Uh-huh.
There was a thing.
It was a Wednesday. Uh-huh.
We had...
Estaba lloviendo.
Uh-huh. I had band rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a McDonald's near this place that we rehearsed at. And they had something called El Olímpico. The McDonald's. So El Olímpico, the McDonald's, no era un Big Mac. El Olímpico de McDonald's eran like a double Big Mac. It had 4 patties.
No.
And it was served like a hero. Like in a hero sandwich. Huge thing for like $3. And
oh my God.
I had an Olímpico like every week for that whole summer.
Oh my God, gross.
Gross. It was awesome.
I remember when I was like 9, my grandma was like, what kind of Happy Meal do you want? And I was like, I think it's time. I want to get a number one, a Big Mac. And she was like, I don't know if you can finish it. And I'm like, I got this. And I ate it so fast. It was so bomb. And I immediately, as soon as we walked out of McDonald's, threw it all up. Because it was like way too much food for me.
Oh, no.
And so I just stuck to chicken nuggets from then on. But... Because you can, you know, chicken nuggets, a medida, right? So it's like, you can just...
Chicken.
Yeah, there you go, moderación. Oh my gosh, man. But that shit affects you, right? So I didn't eat Big Macs for a long time.
Oh, really? I mean, I can imagine. If you your first Big Mac, you throw that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Si lo vomita, it's hard to get back into that.
I know. Okay. I have another question for you.
Another kind of sword.
A follow up. Okay. I'm the Barbara Walters of McDonald's questions. So, listen. Do you know about the McRib sandwich?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We know all about it.
Okay. I saw you light up, Angelica. Chime in.
I think Angelica has to...
Do you know about the McRib sandwich? Do you know why it exists?
No.
Let me tell you. So, the McRib sandwich, years ago, was invented by McDonald's. Actually, the meat patty for the McRib was invented by the same guy that invented the Philly cheese meat. For the Philly cheesesteak.
When you say invented the patty, like it didn't exist, and now
The form, like the
and also, the form
and the ingredients to make that form. Yeah,
I was sweating. Yeah.
So there are certain times of the year when it's more expensive to buy beef, and it's usually the winter months, November, December, sometimes into February, till supplies last, right? So it's a way to distract the consumer into buying another item instead of like regular beef patties. Oh. So that McDonald's doesn't lose money. Because if everybody were to buy beef during the winter,
sale bien caro.
Then McDonald's actually loses money.
Ya no es el value menu.
No. Oh my so God. Wow. that's why the McRib sandwich exists.
That's interesting.
Now I want to know, what do you think of the McRib sandwich?
I was team McRib.
Yeah?
Yeah. I remember going to McDonald's just because of that. When the McRib was part of the menu, I was like, oh, yeah, that's... It's
sweet.
It felt more salty. Real.
What? More real than what?
Than the chicken McNugget.
Oh, well, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it felt... Yeah, I really liked it. And I was all about the McRib and the witch, la papita.
Papita's witch.
Papita Welch. Yo tenía una tía que decía papita Welch.
Welch?
Papita. Pero esa no la venden aquí. Welch.
Yeah, just like wedge fries.
Oh, yeah. Here. I didn't know they had those. Wow. That's in Puerto Rico only.
Puerto Rico. Olympico and wedge fries.
And is there any specific Puerto Rico McDonald's items?
That's other than the wedge fries. Interesting question because.
Now there are.
Really?
Now.
Isn't it. Burger King mostly and Wendy's.
Well, they do that. They have their own like Puerto Rican breakfast.
Yeah.
Right now, yeah, where they serve like Mallorca.
They serve Mallorca sandwich de pan sobao.
Sandwich de pan sobao, tostado, like whatever you can find like at the deli in Bushwick. Now they serve it at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, knowing this about you just opens up so many other conversations.
The McRib.
Yes.
I never actually had one. I don't know why.
Same here.
What?
Excuse me, Jose?
I haven't eaten any. That was too fancy for me. I was like, El Olimpico was like top of the line like item there.
Right. So like after you eat that, then what's the point of living?
Once you have four patties at once, right? Why?
What's the point?
Yeah, what's the point?
Con papita Welch.
Yeah.
Papita Welch.
Oh,
and
my God.
The funny thing is that my dad, I remember as a kid, like, I wanted two cheeseburgers. And he would say, que tú te vas a comer dos cheeseburgers. I'm like, just wait. I'm going to eat four of them. And we still say that to my dad. To this day, we still say that thing to him. And he's like, I never said that. I'm like, Dad, you said that every time we went to McDonald's. And we wanted an additional cheeseburger.
So besides Papita's Wedge, what other items that are popular or chains that are popular in Puerto Rico you miss that are not here?
My favorite one is El Mesón.
Ooh, what is that?
El Mesón, it's like sandwiches, kind of fancy sandwiches, and not fancy, I mean for a sandwich place. It's like, yeah, I would say they're very good quality ingredients, very good papitas.
Criollo,
yeah. And they have good baked potatoes too. And
the turkey sandwich is so good.
Turkey sandwich is super good. And then Taco Maker. It's the, yeah.
What? Excuse me? ¿Qué es eso?
Taco Maker.
The Taco Maker.
It's a local fast food chain.
Why are you looking at me? You know this.
You got this, girl. You got this.
I can do this. They have really good burritos. That the meat is actually meat. I believe so.
I think that when you say burritos, you have to let people know that you have to rethink what you think a burrito is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into that.
It's not a traditional burrito because it doesn't have... It's just a tortilla, some salad, and meat.
And cheese.
That's it.
No, but más carne y queso.
Pero la carne de Taco Maker was really good. Yeah.
Ground?
Yeah. Ground, yeah. Because, I'm sorry, Taco Bell.
Ay,
eso, eso no es carne.
Cuidado. Cuidadito. You know I love Taco Bell, girl.
Deja que vaya a Puerto Rico y te lleva a Taco Maker.
Okay.
You're going to be a Taco Maker convert. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Yeah.
I was just there this past weekend for a wedding, just for like 2 days, and my first stop after the airport was
Taco Maker.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So that's your favorite, the burrito?
I like the burrito and I always ask for them to change the fries.
Regular fries
for nachos. Mini nachos.
Baby nachos.
Baby nachos, they call them.
I don't know if it's a Puerto Rico thing or it's just your accent, but the way you say the shh is like you're from Chihuahua, from Mexico, and I'm fucking living for it. You keep saying nachos, because that's how my sister nachos. And my mom talks. Like, because from Chihuahua, we don't differentiate CH or SH.
Yeah.
Everything is
could be a combination.
A combination of
both.
Pero los dos son puertorriqueños.
Where yo soy boricua 100%.
Uh-huh. Ah.
¿Y usted, bajo. Señor?
Me tiró bajo con esa.
Ajá.
Yo soy ciudadano. Antes de que me deporten.
Which is why we got married.
Yo soy ciudadano. So don't send ice over here.
That's not funny.
No. Not funny for me. And many, many people. Mm-hmm. I was born in the Dominican Republic, but I grew up in Puerto Rico.
Mm.
So I feel like I'm Puerto Rican. I don't know, like, island-born Puerto Ricans think about me, like my wife, but I feel like I'm 100% Boricua, too.
Yeah. I was just speaking for myself.
By the way, I eat rice and beans, and every Puerto Rican eats that. I don't know of a Puerto Rican that doesn't eat rice and beans, so... Habichuela.
Habichuela?
I want to know something. I mean, I don't know if we're getting off the topic, but when you guys met, what were you guys listening to at the time?
Really good question.
Yeah, okay. That is a great question, but before we get to it, we have to take a little break. Teaser! Hey everybody, it's Favi Fav with a special announcement. The Trailblazing Stars original series, Vida, is back this Memorial Day weekend for its second season. A show for the Latinx community, this series does not hold back in its authentic storytelling. Okay, sorry about that. I couldn't resist. All right, y'all, you know we love Vida. We got our Vida from Vida last season. Some of you were there at La Leaf last year, the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival. Babelito and I and Locatora Radio, we interviewed the cast. Oh my God, we never aired it as an episode. This would be a good time to air it, to celebrate the second season of Vida. You know what? Starting today, Mimi, you can binge all 10 episodes on the Stars app and Stars On Demand. That's right. All episodes are dropping at once, so you can binge them all. Listen, this critically acclaimed series follows Lynn and Emma Hernandez, however you like to say it, however you identify, I don't know, as they navigate rebuilding their mother's bar, contemplate the relationships in their lives, and start operating on a chingona level. They are forced to discover what their mother's legacy means to them as they face growing challenges in their East LA neighborhood. Shout out to East LA, Boyle Heights, where most of this TV show takes place. Anyway, I'm off the script. I'm sorry. Let me get back. Catch up on all past episodes on the Stars app, y'all. Listen, Linda, again, if you haven't seen it, What are you waiting for? Put your life together. And we're back.
Okay, let's get into the music.
What did you ask again?
So, I want to know what little Jose and little Angelica were listening to at the time you guys met and fell in love.
We were listening to a lot of like bands from Iceland. We were very into the Icelandic scene. Like, and Noah and Angelica liked Björk, but I liked another band called Moom from Ireland.
Yes,
Iceland.
Yeah.
So Moom is kind of like the blueprint for Early Balloon. So this is a band from Iceland that they had like acoustic instruments like violin and things like that, but they also liked Aphex Twin and a lot of like that electronic side. And we were like just blown away by the fact that there was a band doing that, and it wasn't Björk.
But before we started dating and before Balloon, like you were listening to a lot of electronic music, and I was listening to a lot of classical music, like a lot of Russian composers like Schnittke, Stravinsky, Shostakovich, and then Björk.
Yeah, you like Björk a lot. Like we a lot of people in college knew about Angelica because she was like one of the two people in her whole campus that had seen Björk live. So it was Angelica and then Andres Fontanes, who became our guitar player.
So where do you see Björk at?
I saw her at Radio City Music Hall Vespertine Tour. Yeah, which was incredible. Yeah.
I didn't see her till like 2008. So you listened to Sigur Rós. So this is interesting because knowing this about both of you, like it almost makes sense, like the basis of Balloon, where it's coming from and how it developed into this whole entire new thing.
Yeah, and like I listen to a lot of vocal music or purely acoustic music, and Jose was listening to a lot of the artists that were doing the, like, that was just electronics, that were things that were similar to what Björk was doing in terms of production, but without the vocals. So it was kind of when we started dating, it was like me getting to know like Björk's influences and
like, yeah, because like on Vespertine, she had like a couple of tracks where vocal versions of existing tracks from like IDM artists, like Opiate and people like that. So when I first, like Björk didn't really click with me until Vespertine because she was singing atop like music that I already knew about. So that made it easier for Angelica and I to kind of like talk in the same language because I was kind of like bringing that electronic production into our songwriting. And then you had the classical and the instrumentation and the vocals on top.
Yeah, and I remember, I think it was Iceland, but also we were listening to a lot of Boards of Canada.
Yeah.
A lot of Boards of Canada and a lot of Stereolab too.
Por siempre. Stereolab por siempre.
So you agreed all this, in a way, indie experimental electronic bands. Was there something, a point of contention where you're like, nope, I don't like that at all?
There were a couple of bands that we don't agree at all on.
I've never liked The Cure. And it's one of Jose's favorite bands. And I was trying to be a supportive wife and went to see them at Madison Square Garden. And I remember this guy that was sitting next to me that threw up. I was like, this is it. I'm done with this band forever. Like, I was trying my best, and this guy threw up. And then I remember, like,
was it a Big Mac?
Or? It was like a un Olimpico.
The food of choice for fans of The Cure.
But I just remember, like, after that, listening to the songs that I didn't like, and with this kind of a Fabuloso meets Vomito smell.
Oh. They poured like this like cleaner on top of the vomit, but they didn't really clean the vomit.
Oh, so it's like the worst multisensory experience of my life. Yeah.
You know what's so interesting? like stepping away from the vomit. that a lot of people don't realize that a lot of this Latinx bands that are happening right now, a lot of the things that you guys are doing, like the basis or not necessarily just Latin American bands. Because I remember I growing up after the scene of rock en español ended, I felt lost. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started going into indie music. And it sounds like you were doing something similar.
Yeah, I mean, in Puerto Rico, we were very aware. Like, we have MTV en español, MTV Latino. The whole, like, rock en español explosion, like, got to Puerto Rico. So we knew a lot of, like, Café Tacuba, a lot of, like, Mexican bands. So Estéreo, Cerati, all that was pretty big in the island. But for me personally, it got to a point where I wanted to listen to the non-mainstream stuff. Like, they felt alternative, but they didn't feel indie.
Right.
So we were kind of, like, lost in that sense until we started finding out about, like, net labels that were coming out from Mexico. Abolipop, Sound Sister, where Arca got his start in Abolipop.
When he was very...
Yeah, he was, like, 15. Poppy. He was doing, like pop songs.
Postal Service kind of.
Postal Service. And then we had a friend from Brazil that kind of, like, asked Balloon to be in this compilation. And then he was just sending us a lot of, like, bands that we didn't... Oh, there's, like, Peruvian shoegaze. Oh, there's, like, Mexican IDM. There's, like, Venezuelan electropop. What is this world that we don't know about?
Right, and those are the kind of things that only if a friend burn a CD for you, you have access to. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
That reminds me also that one band that we had in common that we really loved was Super Aquello. Puerto Rico, which is a local band that no longer exists, but that was really influential and still is, actually.
It's a legendary band.
Legendary band, really incredible band. But yeah, that was also, like, we would see each other at their shows too.
Yeah, I mean, the indie scene in Spanish was, like, our scene, what we knew, like, the local bands. But Super Aquello is an interesting case because they had all these influences that we had, but they were the most Puerto Rican band you can ever, like, hear or see live.
What does that mean?
So first of all, not all of them were musicians. So they had the two main singers. They did performance. Like
contemporary dance.
Contemporary dance. Yeah. The guitar player, he's like a psychologist. The keyboard player is a graphic designer. So they weren't like really like trained musicians, but they had all the Puerto Rican idiosyncrasy like. Down in their songs, like they will use very Puerto Rican words, and they didn't feel forced. So you will go there and you will see their shows, and you'll be like, oh yeah, gongoli, pitipua, blah blah blah. That kind of like the way that we talk in Puerto Rico, and it wasn't kind of
the
like
Spanglish too. The Spanglish. Like that song, the chorus is like barbecue, Q-tip, pitipua, gongoli.
Those are like all Puerto Rican words. Some of them, but
barbecue especially.
Barbecue. But I think that the main idea with them is the fact that they were bringing all these like experimental influences and all this like highbrow like approach to it. But in the end, it sounded so Puerto Rican, and they weren't trying to like elevate Puerto Rican music or let me take like you know street slang and insert it into a song. Now I'm recontextualizing it, and now it's like acceptable for the elitist indie scene. They were just Puerto Rican, and they happened to have that word in it. So and at no point I felt that they were, like, appropriating Puerto Rican culture and trying to make it more, you know, more artsy or elevating it, which is a very problematic.
It was just who they were, and it came across as very genuine. And, so that was one of the bands that we bonded.
Yeah, I went into a mini rant, but... I just don't like the elevation analogy, like elevating.
Yeah, because it creates like hierarchies that aren't that, and that's the point of those bands to get rid of those hierarchies. But that's how local Latin American movements start. Because if you think about, like, I was reading this book about Café Tacuba, and that's exactly what they said. They wanted to do something local because you had the wave of rock en tu idioma from South America. And they wanted to do something similar. That's when Rock en Español, but it was like a very Mexico City centric.
Yeah.
All the big labels bought it and then it became its own monster. But it was this, it's about identity. And a lot of people, so when you say like, about singing in Spanglish, like that's something that a lot of kids identify with today, for example. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere. It's all over the Americas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they made it in a way where it felt you felt that you didn't have to kind of like, even though you were making like European-centric sounds, they never, their lyrics transported everyone who was listening to their songs back to Puerto Rico. You know, even though they liked Stereolab and Coctuk Twins, at no point they were like, okay, let's gonna make, we're making this more Puerto Rican by adding like Bombay Plena just for the sake of it. They didn't even need that. So anyone who could listen to them, they'll be like, oh, it's like Stereolab, but wait, it's Puerto Rican. You know, like that I appreciated from them. Mm-hmm. And Angelica was like one of their biggest fans.
Yeah, I mean, like, I came from a very different background than Jose. Was like, in high school, like listening to Autechre and Aphex Twin and Skirt Pusher, I was like very much sheltered, like classical music, and listening to, well, I had like Tori Amos, Fiona Apple, Jewel, kind of like all female singers and writers, things that I loved. But and Beck, I was really obsessed with Beck in high school. But then, but my musical world was revolved around classical music, and classical music a lot of the times meant music by dead white men. And I...
The best kind. Sorry, guys.
Hi. I love that you were quiet for a while, and then that's your comeback. So I didn't... Yeah, I didn't even know that there were, like, living people writing music and or people in the early 20th century writing music. So when I found out about those composers and after years of playing in orchestras and not really connecting as much to the music that I was playing and finding out like all these contemporary composers, and especially at that time, like John Cage was a huge influence for me, just like blew my mind. And so that was more of my world. And then I found out about this band in Puerto Rico that just kind of made me question everything I was listening to and the music I wanted to make. And
yeah, I mean, every show that they put together, it was kind of like site-specific art in that sense. Like every show, it was a very unique show that you wouldn't get from them again. It was always like a different setup, a different costume, a different like lineup. They would like rearrange songs. It was very different.
I remember the first time I saw them, I think it was at La Pregunta. Yeah. And they, it was like this room. And I remember there was like a baby in Pampers.
Pampers.
Pampers. Un bebé en Pampers.
En Pampers.
El Osteraisel. There was a baby hanging out. And there. And I remember the set was like all like... Matamoscas,
fly swatters.
As flowers, as if they were flowers. And it was just colorful, but like this very distinctive and kind of very immersive. It was very kind of magical, but at the same time irreverent. And I remember a song that in which one of the singers was just chewing gum very loudly as the other singer was singing. And it's just like very unique sense of not caring but putting together something really well thought that really captivated me, and still a big fan even though they don't play.
Okay, so let's fast forward to your latest album, which we absolutely love, and I want to talk about Prisma Tropical, right? And your roles actually in the band, just if for some reason y'all are under a rock and have never listened to Latinos Who Lunch, first of all, put your life together. Yeah. And secondly, go listen to the album right now. Stream it, buy it. It's on all media platforms. They are there. Just listening to you talk about music is so wonderful because I hear all those influences in your music. And it's also really inspiring to me to listen to this coming from Latinos, right? Mm-hmm. Because when people say, you know, a Puerto Rican band, or, you know, with band members que son puertorriqueños, like, you assume they're going to sound a certain way. So when I hear your music, it kind of breaks all the rules, you know? And that is really exciting when it comes to art in general. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. So, Angelica, I've actually talked to you before on the Art People podcast, and we talked about you being a composer. You also do the vocals for Balloon, and Jose, you You are responsible for a lot of the productions, and you play a lot of the instruments, bass, synth, and whatever percussion you may need. All of it. But let's get into that. Like the people in the band, your roles in the band.
So Jose and I are we started Balloon, and we are still the main songwriters. Usually, songs start with Jose, and then I come in, and then we add the other our other friends that are collaborating in their respective instruments. I usually bring in the vocals. I love playing with, like, adding more melodies. I love melodies and adding more melodies to what Jose has written. I play the accordion in Balloon too. And for Prisma Tropical, I did string arrangements for 5 or 6 of the songs in the record, which was really fun. And then we had a string quartet that recorded them. And yeah, and sometimes keyboards and found sounds that I love.
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of what you bring. And then, like, I usually start the songs and I already have, like, an idea of where I want them to go. So, right, I do a lot of, like, the electronic production, kind of, like, what would be the signature sound for the concept for every song. So I was teaching in the South Bronx for a while, music production, so... a lot of Prisma Tropical comes from that experience because I had kids from all over the world and they wanted to learn music production. They wanted to make beats of the countries that they're from. So I had kids from different African countries all over, also the Caribbean, and they were bringing genres I have never heard in my life. So I grew up with reggaeton and then dembow, and I'm like, okay, that's it for the Caribbean. But these kids were bringing, you know, like Haitian music and like South African house and, you know, other genres that I wasn't aware of. So a lot of Prisma Tropical comes from that experience, me learning how to make those rhythms and then inserting them in the album. So that's why it has that sort of like a global pop kind of feeling. But yeah, and I do the melodies and like then everyone else in the band, they bring in their respective, you know, parts, like the guitar player, he will do his thing, and Nora, who plays the cuatro and the Puerto Rican tiple, and the bass. So it's very like I do kind of like the skeleton, and then everyone else comes in. The people that actually went to music school come in, and then they do like all the melodic stuff that is, you know, that's what they're there for.
What about the lyrics? Who writes the lyrics? Because the lyrics are very specific.
I write all the lyrics, and they're in Spanish because that's how I think. And I've tried writing songs in English, but it doesn't come off very natural to me. And maybe it will, the more time I'm here, I think now Spanglish is becoming more and more part of my everyday. But I love the way Spanish sounds, and for, I think it's very tied to me and my brain to when Balloon started and when we started incorporating lyrics. So I've always thought of Balloon as a band that sings in Spanish. And the lyrics are usually start with a melody that's nonsense and that slowly evolves into words that slowly evolve into phrases or sentences. So I like to have lyrics that are, they're specific, but they're oftentimes very surreal and open, so that it could be really about many things. They're about a very specific thing in my head, but hopefully when the listener is experiencing them, they can make connections to something that's meaningful for them too.
So now that you're getting all this attention, do you feel, and I mean, we've known about Balloon for a long time, but I feel like a lot of outlets are just finding out who you guys are. Do you feel pressure to write in English? Pressure, yeah.
Pression.
I don't feel any pressure for writing in English. Maybe I'm too involved as an artist to consider outside pressures. But I feel like it's a very important, an integral part of how we write. And I think that if at a point it naturally comes that there's something in Spanglish or something that flows better out of my mind in English, then it will happen. And I don't think it's something that will never happen. It's just, it has to feel natural. Mm. The same way that if someone had told me that we would be using Dembow beats in Balloon, I would, like, if someone told me that 10 years ago, I would be like, what? Like, I was, most of my life was trying to avoid that that sound because I'm from the town where it was born and it was all over and very,
yeah, to use,
I was
mainstream.
Very saturated. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. From an early age with that sound. So, but now, you know, it just happened and it feels right. So yeah, I feel the same way about language too.
So I want to do something fun. Hopefully it's fun for you guys. but is it okay if we play one of your songs on our show?
Claro que sí.
Seguro que yes.
So Babelito, what's your favorite song?
No, I'll let our guests choose one that
they're not
going
to choose their favorite. Yes, is it hard for you?
No, like, no. But aren't they like want people to listen to?
Or do you have a favorite song?
It's really hard, but I'm super curious now to know which one is your favorite.
Yeah,
song.
Come on, Babelito.
Ay, Dios mío, es que no me sé los títulos.
La número 10.
Well, I have my Spotify open right now.
El espanto. I want to hear el espanto.
Okay, let's hear it real quick.
Good choice.
Talk about that intro.
That's all Jose. So I'm gonna,
yeah, Jose,
talk
tell
about
us
that.
About that intro.
You know, I want to say something very a cliche, but that intro was an accident.
Okay.
So I was trying to program like a melody in my computer, and I hit something wrong, and I put the note in the wrong place, and I got that groove, and I'm like, huh, this is pretty cool. And then from that, I just like layered other sounds and I kept the groove and I'm like, okay, años atrás, la nueva ciudad, now we have another song where we can do the dembow rhythm.
But and it was also, we kept calling it, before it had a title, we kept calling it Salsatón.
Salsatón, yeah.
Because it has kind of like a salsa groove to it too.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened. I'm trying to recreate that. I haven't been able to in other songs, but it was just very cool to do.
And the instrument, the saxophone in it, is that a live recording of somebody or a found sound?
No, so we that's something that I requested for the record. The I had a synthesizer line that sounded just like a baritone saxophone. Uh-huh. So we found a really good Alex Hamlin. He's a local musician, and he recorded baritone saxophone for the rest of the song.
And that metallic sound, the percussive sound.
Oh, that's a sample.
Okay.
That's one of our samples. Yeah. And it had more metallic sounds in the song, but I had to take some of them out because they were too much.
Too heavy metal, huh?
Too heavy metal.
So, esa voz, my gosh, how angelic.
Never heard that one before.
Damn. I love the way that you layer your voice. So it's like very...
expansive.
I love that.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, Balloon, when we started, it was instrumental. And then I really loved writing words, but I didn't consider myself a singer. Or didn't think I could sing. So I started writing songs for Balloon and had like a friend to sing that song. And then we had like one of my cousins when she was really young sing a song. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to try the next one. And then it was very shy beginning for incorporating vocals in Balloon. And this, I think this record is the first time that I feel like I'm owning the fact that, okay, I'm the singer in the band, because I always used to hide behind my violin or my accordion and the other things. Yeah, so this is the first time that was a big part of the record when we worked with our producer, with Lawson, was to make the vocals very present and just own it.
And what about that beat?
So the beat, since we started that salsaton kind of like groove in it, and I was like, oh, perfect. Now we can add like another like dembow rhythm, but I really wanted like a hard dembow rhythm. So in La Nueva Ciudad, it's a little bit more softer, more like dream pop, dream popish. So this one, we were like, let's just go hard, because that song, we finished that song in Puerto Rico right before a festival performance we had. So we wanted to play something that would hit hard and that would be, you know, something that would blow people's mind. So we were like, okay, we have the salsa, we have the dembow, we have the metallic sound, we have Angelica. And then we played it to my dad, and my dad was like, yeah, you have to play this. You have to finish the song now. The beat was like the hardest like dembow rhythm we could like do.
Okay, and then you mentioned there's a Blink-182 moment coming.
We always refer to it, Raul and I, and well, everyone in the band.
It is. Because
this song is very, like, Balloon also is very ADD in a way. It has, like, we love many different styles of music, and we have, like, we have moments that were, like, that doesn't sound like anything else in the song. And this is one of those moments that it's, like, every time we play it, I'm like winking at Raul, like, yeah, this is our Blink-182 moment because of the guitar line.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to back it up a little bit, and then we're going to start with that. It's like one of those Blink-182 moments.
Exactly.
I mean, and it checks out because Raul, our guitar player, he played in Blink-182. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. He didn't go to the Fire Festival, did he?
No, Raul. Raul is actually from the punk scene in Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay.
So we know him from the different punk bands that he played in.
So this is like, when I hear this part, I'm always wondering, because I wondered how you guys stop yourselves from not going overboard. Because you, like, one of the things that attracts me to music, especially right now, it's the layering, the producing, and like you can hear it, you can hear building. But I wonder when it's enough, when it's not enough, because many bands do it wrong and they just keep adding and adding and the result is a fucking mess. Like, and you guys have like this perfect formula.
I think we learned a lot during the Prisma Tropical on how to work with that, because we traditionally did way too many layers in our earliest and like in our previous records, and we were realizing that we were putting way too many ideas and way too many layers that weren't even like obvious to people. So a lot of it was lost. So with Prisma Tropical, we decided to kind of like, you know what, let's see how much we can get done with the bare minimum and just work with that. And our producer also helped us with that. And for me personally, because I do the production, I had to go through like a letting go process where I'm like, okay, but I need like 5 more synthesizers on this. and you're asking me to just do one. Okay, I guess. And it was great. It's working out, and I learned a lot from it.
I love that part. That's like my favorite part where you hold those long notes. I don't know, for some reason it reminds me of Sesame Street. Like, it's just like, it's like a soundtrack. It's like you're walking and you're walking and you're seeing people and you're waving at them. Like, I'm always like, I don't know, in my head I have this vision of what, like, what my music video would be, kind of thing, you know. It's very playful. I love that part. And even that little break in there, it's just such a nice little, like, something happens and, you know, it's just, it's almost like a narrative when you're listening to the song.
Yeah, and I think we like playing with that a lot, with like something that musically sounds more like more evocative and playful, and then the lyrics are not necessarily the complete opposite, but they're a little bit darker and more like, it's basically talking about someone that needs a cleansing and that it's, and just really in a really kind of how do you say this, like a it's an intervention almost to this person, that's something's really wrong with them and you just want to do a cleansing for them to see if they could start over.
There's a lot of construction and deconstruction and reconstruction in this song. Like, can you guys talk a little bit about that? Because I see how the song is coming together, and by the time you're gonna start rocking out, then you deconstruct the whole entire thing and then you build it all up. What is that?
Something we do a lot in our songs, I think.
Yeah. That section in particular is interesting, because I was trying, I mean, I think everyone in this room is a music nerd, but in that section I was like, I'm gonna do a Chicago footwork type of beat, and that's where you get.
Bitch, that's what I was sensing. Okay. Yeah.
So you get that, you know, I want to do the but I didn't get to. But I left the melody, and then the other part with the. I wanted to do like a Daddy Yankee rompe type of vibe, but it became too industrial for that. But yeah, I think that for me, the construction and deconstruction happens in like taking elements of things that I like and then maybe like reconstructing them in a different manner and then taking them away, and all in the layering that you were talking about. But maybe Angelica, she's in the room, but she's with the dog, can add to that.
Yeah, let's take a little music break and play a little more of the song, and then we'll be back with Angelica.
Thank you.
I just ended up playing the whole song. I love that last, like, Matrix Prodigy part. It's my favorite.
The happy hardcore?
Yeah.
That's really fun to play live. It's a moment in which we all go kind of crazy and jump all over. And
It's just like a great way to kind of, like, end the song and, like, feel really good about it. Just, like, put all your energy into the ending and being super lively. And Helika's, like, jumping on stage, shaking, like, this percussion instrument.
It is the actual cleansing, I feel.
It's the actual cleansing. Yeah. Yeah, and we get to make noise, like Sonic Youth. For those who like Sonic Youth.
Who's that?
Angelica's favorite band.
I like them, yeah.
You like El Espanto.
I do not like The Cure.
I have a question for you, Angelica. I grew up playing music, musical instruments. And
La tuba.
La tuba. Yeah. And even now, to me, when I listen to songs the first few times, I don't really listen to the words. I listen to singing as like an instrument. Like whatever the words are, it doesn't really matter to me. And the way that you layer your words, your voice is, to me, it sounds like an instrument. You can't really make out the words unless you are really, really trying to pay attention and decipher them. Is that on purpose?
Definitely. And I think that we both kind of grew up on that, like listening to the voice as another instrument. And like Jose's favorite band, and I really love this band too, Cocteau Twins, it's like made up lyrics too. And I think that it also came naturally from that place of like not being really confident as a singer and thinking of it like, oh yeah, this is just another voice, another layer. It just happens to be my voice. And then slowly the voice kept kind of coming more to the surface. And in this album, it's where it's been the most upfront. But still, I think the way I think about writing for the voice is very much like another instrument. Yeah.
So I see you guys, I mean, maybe because of my limited knowledge on the scene, but I see you guys as leading this movement of transforming Caribbean sounds into something different. And you may disagree with me, but I wondered if you guys can tell me a little bit more about bands that are following you or bands that you are following that are in the same wave. Kind of like recommendations, yeah.
Well, I love, love, love Mula.
Yeah.
And
you know, I was thinking about that name. Because like a mula, a mule, right?
Yes.
It's like a mix between a donkey and a horse.
Uh-huh.
And then the horse, I mean, the mula can't reproduce. So it's like, it's a creature, it's almost like a unicorn.
Mm.
And I see the members of the band like that, like unicorns.
Ah, interesting.
I wonder if that's why they named it Mula.
Yeah,
Or if they just wanted the mula, they just wanted the money. I don't know. But I'm interested. If we ever interview them, I'm going to ask them that first.
You should interview them. Yeah,
no saber. We've known of them since Las Acevedo, and which was very different. And Mula, for me, it's doing a really unique blend of rhythms and lyrics. I really love their words and the way they put together words reminds me actually a lot of Super Aquello, that band, that the Puerto Rican band that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Lyrics are really well thought and very evocative, and you kind of want to be there with them and the place they are. And it's also very, it seems that it's, again, that going back to that conversation about like this idea of elevating a genre, it seems like it's not coming from that place, which is great. It seems like it's just something very natural to them, and they're really having fun with it.
Yeah.
Any other bands like around?
I have to say Ife.
Oh yeah,
they are from Puerto Rico. I feel that they are really like leading the wave in like Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean, like futurism. These are like an ensemble from Puerto Rico who are doing like Afro-Caribbean music in an Afro-Caribbean tradition, but they're using electronic instruments. So they all come on stage, they sit down, they have, you know, their actual acoustic, like their actual drums, but they have like triggers in them, and they really do like a good blend of like the modern and the traditional, and they also have like a dance hall element. So in Ife, the lead member, Otu Ramon, he used to be DJ Nature, and he did a lot of like dance hall stuff in the past, and that shows in the music. And even in the group, they have Mima, who is like a very famous singer in the Puerto Rican like indie scene. If you haven't heard Mima, you should check out Mima. She's awesome. And I feel like they're definitely on to something that's like really, really new. And again, they're not trying to elevate anything. They're just trying to they really learned the music and they really enjoy the music, but they're playing it in the language that they know, which is electronic and acoustic instrumentation, which is awesome.
So I felt like 2018 was your year. I mean, again, you may disagree, but you guys were everywhere. What's next for Balloon?
What's next?
Long pause.
I'm leaving that in.
For now, Pocking to South by Southwest. We're playing there the third year in a row. We're excited about that.
We got upgraded this year.
Bro, this is going to come out after, so y'all did really great.
It was amazing.
Wow.
It was such a blast.
So we already went. We did the show.
How'd it go?
It went great.
Packed house.
Packed house. Better than the past few years.
Check out pitchfork.com.
And we're already writing new material. We don't know when the next album is going to be out. It's very early for that, but we're hoping to extend the life of Prisma Tropical in all the ways that, or exploring many of the ways that it could, and shapes it could take. Because, for example, we did last year or 2 years ago with Lake George, we did a
2 years ago. Yeah,
2 years ago we did a show with an orchestra in which we
did all Prisma Tropical like symphonic version.
Yeah, and that's something that we want to take to other places. And because when we play live, it's a different experience than the record. We try to maintain the same spirit and energy, but still the string arrangements are oftentimes not there. And that's something that we would love to like find opportunities and places and spaces in which we can bring the whole Prisma Tropical experience to audiences.
So, right now we're working mostly on like live dates over the summer. We might be doing a show in Chicago. We're looking into doing shows in the West Coast.
Come to Las Vegas.
Yeah, we're trying to make like a West Coast tour happen. And I know that there's like other stuff in the works. We really want to get to play in Mexico. That's like one of the main places that we want to go, like Colombia, go back to Colombia. So I think this year is kind of like getting to play, just putting Balloon in front of new people that haven't heard Balloon yet and just giving them the live experience of Prisma Tropical.
I'm so excited about that. I want to see y'all live. I haven't seen y'all live yet.
Me neither.
I mean, I've stalked you on the internet, so I've seen your YouTube stuff, but nothing.
We have a confirmed date in Chicago, so that Babelito will hopefully see us live.
What? When is it?
Yeah, and June 15th.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to be in town.
It's a festival, but I don't know if we can announce it, but we're playing.
Yes.
We'll tell you all the details.
Okay,
And if you're in...
Check.
So,
well, please stay with me. I'm sure you have plenty of friends to stay with in Chicago, but I will reciprocate this meal.
Me va a hacer bologna.
Ooh, lo que quieras.
Como es bologna.
Waffles con bologna.
Waffles con bologna.
Lo que se les ocurre. And I'll make you a Big Mac if you want to.
Sweet.
Damn.
Un olímpico, güey.
Yo quiero el olímpico. El olímpico de Chicago.
Oh, my gosh. Jose, Angelica, thank you so much for being on Latinos Who Lunch. You're amazing.
No, gracias por having us.
Muchísimas gracias. It's so inspiring to see a couple being together for so long and doing amazing things together and still going strong. Thank you so much for your music and everything you do.
Gracias a ustedes.
Gracias a ustedes.
And as always, you could visit us at latinoswholunch.com. If you have a question, send us an email, asklwl@gmail.com. If you have a moment, please rate us 5 stars.
5 stars only.
5 estrellas solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are, and
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters, people.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. The music you heard on today's show was by Balloon, and the music you're hearing right now is by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelitude.
Bye.
Bye.